Good afternoon. Today is Tuesday, May the 17th, 2016. It is 1:30 p.m. This is a pre-fire season meeting of the Board of County Commissioners. I'm going to go around the room, have everyone sit. We have a full board, so but I'm still going to have a say our name in case someone doesn't know someone in here. I'm Cheryl Walker.
Keith Heck.
Simon here.
Lynn Johnson.
Dave Larson, District Forester.
Jenny Hall.
Denny.
Tyler McCarty, Unit Forester.
Austin Prince, Rural Metro.
John Carnes, Iceland Fire and Rescue.
Thank you. Okay. Our agenda today. We are going to have an open discussion and information sharing regarding the activation of local fire service mutual aid resources, the request and activation of state mobilization resources, and request for conflagration. I hate that word. Fires in the unprotected areas and agency roles. And there's a fire out there.
And over there.
And over there. Yeah, I see the smoke
They're
up there.
They're
the control burns?
Are they control burns?
Yeah, BLM. Force.
Okay, good. All right. We've had the introduction, and we have the fire chiefs here and our emergency manager. Okay, agency information, Fire Defense Board.
Good evening.
Happy you.
Well, once again, thank you very much for hosting us on the line so we can share with you guys and reestablish and renew our relationship with the board and talk fire, especially as we start walking into the 2016 fire season. I'm really excited from the standpoint that we've had this conversation several times now, and so it's not about trying to bring you guys up to speed and get you educated and all that. We've got a lot of experience at the table, and from our standpoint, that is really helpful when it comes time to actually engage in fire and work collaboratively together, because you guys have already got that guy's background. You've got a sense of the flavor for it. But some things have changed, and so this is that opportunity for us to get engaged and talk about a few of those. And I think the biggest one is that the leadership has changed at ODF.
Mm-hmm.
And Dave, Tyler, and Lee Winslow, who's Tyler's counterpart over in Jackson County, they're new faces, new players on the field, all long-standing ODF employees, and we've worked with them for years, and so we're really excited about working with these guys, that we figured it'd be a good time for you to get introduced to them, because this would be the Rick, if you will,
right?
And so that you guys can put a name and a face together, so when we're out in the field and we're engaged, or we come in for some meetings and do some sharing, if we should happen to be hosting this year, then you guys have kind of got that established. Other than that, to talk a little bit about conflagrations and just renew what some expectations are, make sure that we still have the same connectivity and that we all understand the roles, and then answer any questions you guys might have that have come up over the year or you might be thinking about or maybe even posed to you from the community that we can help answer. My role, again, is I will, again, this year be the lead Fire Defense Board Chief for Josephine County. John is the Jackson County Fire Defense Board Chief. We have another six alternates between the two counties, and we share the role during the summer months, so that way not just one of us is actually lined up and happen to be next to the phone. We go through a rotational list, and that's been published. Jenny has a copy of who those folks are. So if we have something, you may not necessarily be talking to me, but you will be talking to one of the Fire Defense Board Chiefs who will be engaged in functioning in that role.
Last year during the Krause Lane fire, Chief Carnes was actually the Fire Defense Board Chief, and he was out on scene. We just never evolved to the point that we had to do any kind of delegation.
Might not work out that way. Jackson County, the far ends of Josephine County, be you.
Well, in the year before that, I was on my rotation. I ended up out in the middle of Green Springs for the Oregon Gulch fire. I mean, part of that. So, yeah, you never know which one of us, mm-hmm. but you will always be able to reach out and communicate with any of us. Mm-hmm. We've gone to a single phone number now for our duty officer during the summer months, so you don't have to have a list of phone numbers to get a hold of whoever's on call for that given week. But if you don't have that number, we can get it to you, and then also make sure that you have Mike and John's number for sure, because at any time you guys get any kind of questions, please definitely reach out.
I think Jenny can get those to us.
Yeah, and their last year's schedule, which includes everyone's phone numbers, is in your packets currently, but I'll get you the most updated information.
The only change we had in that rotation list is Chief Phillips from Applegate. retired city. Sure. And Chief Brian Fish is the chief over at Bedford Park. It's a great suspect in those roles. So we're a little heavier on Jackson County Chiefs participating this time around than we've been in the past. So we're excited about that. In terms of, we have a fire, and we all do our joint responses, and it begins to grow to a point that's outstripping our local resources being the mutual aid that we have between Josephine County Fire Agencies, and then we're tapping Jackson County agencies that come over to help us. And it continues to grow, and we need to reach out and touch base with the state. That's when we'll be doing mobilization and doing a confederation request. There are actually two little separate things. Mobilization is the process for us to ask for resources from the state level and have them come down to help us. Conflagration is the act that the governor actually approves in order to get the funding to pay for that. We can have mobilization without funding. We just end up having it. Otherwise, that's a good deal. So we want to make sure that occurs. Mm-hmm. And that's where my role or one of the fire defense board chief's role will come in for the areas that that are classified as unprotected, which is anything that's outside of either the city of Grants Pass or a fire district, which we all know. And really, just as that renewal process, the way we have it set up now from a role standpoint is if ODF or one of the other agencies sees that there's a need for additional resources in that protected area, and we need to ask on your behalf for mobilization and conflagration. Our first stop is actually GENC. That's who we're going to contact as the route to get a hold of whoever's on call for you folks to start making and working on that decision tree. So this way we kind of all figured it was still working. Just wanted to make sure that we're all on the same page for that. So that might mean you actually will at some point run into one of us and have some of those conversations. We go through the, we do that. We do bring state resources down, and we need to do a delegation of authority. We do have a model template for that. We've actually used it a couple of years ago. The fires were up in Douglas County, and on the border was Wolf Creek. So hopefully we've got that process that might be worth just taking another look and making sure the legal counsel is comfortable with it, and that if we need to pull that trigger, we can actually renew that that document pretty quickly. And then if we do get into those roles between the fire defense board chief and Jenny and or Sarah, depending on who's available and engaged, be some responsibilities attending planning meetings. Working with the management team that comes down and asks my time's up. Attending those meetings, and at some point as either agency representative or maybe even cooperative, getting you guys out to the scene, out to the fire camp, getting part of that or meeting when some of those bigger level decisions need to be made. And those are things that we will help inform you guys when it's appropriate and time to do this sort, or maybe even have an interest to come out and see how things work. We can do all of that. So you guys are more than welcome, and we embrace the idea of being engaged and wanting to learn and participate. So.
I think we've all done that. It's always a good idea to go out and see what's going on, so that when people ask you questions, you know. I mean, you're not going to know all the details, but at least you know it's taken care of. We have people on site. That's always nice to be able to say that.
From our standpoint and working with the board in the past, we've been very excited and pleased over the last few years of our relationship with you guys, and it's made our jobs a lot easier in terms of representing the county and doing the fire protection. So as your terms evolve and you guys go where you go, know that thank you. Very much appreciated.
You're welcome.
For what you guys have done. So that's kind of my little bit. I'll actually let Dave talk a little bit about ODF changes.
Question. Is there some rule of etiquette here or something that I mean by being the etiquette man that I am?
Yes, of course.
Can they come up here or
absolutely
on the table?
You're welcome to sit up here if you want to.
You're sitting here like the great sphinxes. And
we invited all the they chose to sit there.
You're killing Dennis to sit back here. I know that.
It's making it easier to look at.
No, not that true.
Yeah.
No, because I set up for a whole turn.
It's okay.
All right.
My turn, huh?
Yes.
Well, I'd like to thank the commissioners for hosting the meeting and providing the opportunity for me to come and talk about the Oregon Department of Forestry and actually put a face with the name and, start to build that communication relationship, which is what I think is probably the most important thing that I can do as a district forester down here, is provide someone that's accessible to you at any time, 24 hours a day, if you give me a call, and be able to really build that relationship. Down here, we all know we have a history of quite a few fires down here. 25% of the fires here in the state of Oregon happen in the Southwest Oregon district. And so with that history and having been down here myself on several incidents, what I have noticed is that there's an excellent amount of pre-planning that's taken place here in Southwest Oregon, and the relationships you have the chief and the defense board. And this is something that going around the state is kind of unique to this area, and it's because of the fires that we get in the interface area, the population, and just where we sit in Oregon with the fires. So it's really good to see that, all that in working and being a part of it. A little bit about my background. I started about 26 years ago with the Douglas Forest Protective Association, so I'm not new to Southwest Oregon, but I'm new to the district down here. So and been on quite a few fire assignments, have my task book and my qualifications kind of stamped here throughout the years. But basically started on a hand crew when I was 16 and pretty much came from the dirt up. Throughout my tenure at DFPA, I rose to rank Forest Officer Protection Soup, eventually a unit forester out of the North Unit before getting this job. Some of the qualifications I have, when I was going to college, my goal was originally to be a firefighter paramedic. That's a pretty competitive business to get into. So I was doing basically as a summer job. I didn't initially plan on doing this as a career, just a summer job and something to get through college. And as I started fighting more fires and being more involved in the forestry aspect, I love being out in the woods. But I did put my paramedic and my fire science background to some use. I spent 15 years as a volunteer with the city of Myrtle Creek on the fire department there and served as a training officer in a whole role of different tasks in the swiftwater rescue, technical rope rescue teams, and those sort of things. So I've worn two hats. I understand the wildland aspect, and I also understand the structural aspect and all the complexities that go in when you're on a large wildland fire incident. And probably the number one or the toughest thing is just that initial communication, making sure we're all on the same channel on the radios, that we're able to find each other and communicate and talk. So that was kind of one of my first tasks when I joined the district down here. Was met with the Rogue Valley Fire Chiefs, and we came up with a policy or a procedure that we're all going to utilize this year that's going to bring streamline some communication for us, and I think it's going to make things a lot better from our standpoint in communicating with the rural fire departments. Again, most important thing is the relationships and being able to meet with the landowners, meet with the commissioners and other political figures, and just talk about, because when there's smoke on the landscape, things get pretty politically sensitive, and folks are calling you guys. And so my job and with my staff is to try to feed that information to you and give you accurate and timely information so you're able to, communicate and know what's going on. The worst thing I can do is keep somebody in the dark, so I'll be working really diligently throughout the fire season and even off season to communicate with you all and talk about what's going on. As far as the district, with personnel changes, we probably lost about 135 years of expertise on the district. Dan Thorpe, the district forester, retired, and Rick Dreyer retired, who was the unit forester over here, and Greg Alexander, who was over at Medford. So there's quite a bit of institutional knowledge that left, but with that, myself coming on board and bringing on Tyler and Lee, both highly qualified and really stood out in the interview, so I'm really excited about the future for ODF here in Southwest Oregon and what we'll be able to do for you guys. Communications, again, is key. We're going to really focus and continue to focus an aggressive initial attack. I'm not going to let fires just burn willy-nilly on the landscape there. We're going to follow the letter to the law, and any fire that's, uncontrolled wildfire is going to be aggressively handled. And so we're going to have a full capacity this year with all the retirements that we had. Even though it's three positions, we basically filled 12 positions in the last 13 positions in the last 6 months. So it's been a very busy get-go. But we're getting everybody in place. We're going to have all of our initial attack. We have our district aviation assets will all be back tanker 6-2, the large air tanker, will be hosted here again in Medford and available to us through the Wildland Fire Protection Act or severity dollars that we use, as well as our partnership with the BLM. They're providing an extra aerial asset, which is a Type 3 helicopter that we can actually fly firefighters in and haul cargo and stuff, and so we'll actually be able to work a helicat crew. And that's primarily due to some of the roadless areas that we have in that Soda Mountain wilderness, but we have the ability to use that anywhere on the district, which is a really good asset. We'll have the district Type 2 helicopter again. It will be on a contract probably starting, it's all about timing and trying to figure out when the lightning's going to get us, but probably about the middle of July we'll probably bring that helicopter on contract, and it will remain with us throughout the fire season, as well as a severity helicopter that's provided through the Wildland Fire Protection Act, which will be based in Grants Pass. So we have a pretty good air force that's going to be available, as well as our air attack staff of supervision that'll go along with it. I'm kind of bummed out because I was an air attack there at the Douglas District to manage the aviation program, and so now my wings are kind of clipped a little bit. But we still have 6 air attacks on the district, and we'll be able to utilize that. We do have our agreements in place for mutual aid and handling some of those unprotected areas and stuff that we may roll into in our agreements. So all those are up and ready to go. And we've been working with the Rogue Valley Fire Chiefs. They've got a Type 3 incident management team that they're formulating at least the roster, and we'll have participation from ODF there as well. So from our standpoint, we're locked and loaded and ready to go, and full staffing by the 22nd of June is when our season will
be. By the 15th.
Or by the 15th, yeah. Yep. So we'll be ready to roll. So looking forward to a fire season. Coming from Douglas the last couple of years, it's been pretty rough up there. We had the Douglas complex in 2013. Had a better season in 2014, and then last year was a pretty difficult season for us up there as well. So looking at the long term with the weather forecast, we're probably saying that it's going to be an average fire season. So what is average? Question of extremes. Right? And so are we looking at the last 3 years, and is that our new average? But no, realistically, looking at our fuels conditions, things are a lot better shape than they were last year at this time, but I will caution, when you come out of 3 years of back-to-back drought, it takes a long time for those fuels to recover. And then looking at your elevation, it doesn't really matter for us per se, with the elevation of 4,500 feet where your snowpack kind of left early, that affects more the Forest Service. However, the effect that that has, if they start popping a lot of fires up there, it could create a resource demand on us here. But we've worked with the other districts around. We call it the Jefferson Agreement, and that's just the rapid mobilization of resources between Coos, Douglas, Western Lane, South Cascades, and Klamath. If we get a fire, they will send a bunch of resources right out of the gate, and without the resource, we don't wait for the paperwork, it will catch up. So we give the guys basic information and get them on the road, and it's a reciprocal agreement with the other districts that we do that. So we can mobilize real quick if needed, so hopefully we don't have to.
Yeah.
Okay. Any questions? Any other comments?
I have some thoughts. We've hosted in the years past, it's been a while, or maybe I wasn't aware of it. Could have happened last year, I didn't even know. But we have a number of new staff managers and key departments for the county as well. Mm-hmm. Making that introduction, overcoming some of the challenges that we had. The list that I put together, and it's probably not comprehensive because I sit here and I think of other things, but it's just about everybody, because it's amazing how much fire touches. But Mark Parks, for me, is at the top of the list with a new manager who's got a lot of different things on her plate. And whether or not this group has reached out or there's been some sort of a formal. We had one up at the search and rescue, I think it was 3 years ago, where everybody kind of sat in the room. Public Works is, you know, Rob's solid, but forestry, we have a new forester, new GIS person, airports is solid, sheriff's office is there, but we have a new legal, head of legal, new person in communications. And we'll have a new person in community in our planning department. Public health is also another part of that. We have a new property manager. I think our relationship with Jackson County Emergency Services is growing stronger every year. That would be somebody else. But I would love to be engaged in the conversations. Most of those departments are one I liaison with. Mm-hmm. And also the BLM, the Forest Service, the school districts is being part of that conversation, because I remember, I think it was during the Douglas complex, you guys were at a North Valley school And they've got a new superintendent.
Mm-hmm.
It might be a good idea to kind of interface early and often with these. I'm sure you're prepared to do that, but that they are on the understanding. They may have come here from a place that never has fires,
yeah.
But we're going to need your stool,
yeah.
And it would be great. I think if we could be all on the loop before this happens, especially parks. For me, parks and forestry are the two
mm-hmm.
that are kind of my, you know, I don't want to say kids because they're certainly not, but they're new to this
mm-hmm.
and not new to fire. Because our parks manager comes from Jackson County, so she's well aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
Our forester comes by way of this region. But what are the requirements? What are the responsibilities from?
Sure.
That would be huge to me to be able to just sit down kind of like this. Doesn't have to take, you know, all day or anything, just an hour or two to go over what has been the historic practices, what are the potential needs. GIS and IT, I think we're in a capacity where we can offer a lot, and Jenny has done a tremendous amount already with our resources that we need to be mobile here, but all those things work together, and she would be the first one to focus on all that stuff to coordinate.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree, and I think we'll do some coordination and see about getting some meetings to kind of lay that foundation. That's a great point you make about the superintendents of the school, especially they come
mm-hmm.
from someplace else, and now you got 3,000 people out in your football field, and they're looking at the calendar going, we got daily double start here in a couple weeks, you know,
yeah.
What do we do? So to have some of those conversations and talk about some
sure.
of those agreements that we can have in place, mm-hmm. that way they can be compensated financially for the utilization of
and
the
school. And they can line up daily doubles at another school.
Oh, yeah.
Got
yeah.
that already kind of in the queue, so they're not stressed and freaking out
yeah.
for other reasons.
Yeah, and I also like the IT and the GIS type work. You know, when things get really busy, and especially the last couple of years, resources, you know, there's a huge mm-hmm. draw and strain on resources, especially with what was going on up in
yeah.
the state of Washington and trying right. to get those expertise. So, you know, to me it makes financial sense and also puts back in the community. If we have somebody local
mm-hmm.
we can grab versus fly somebody in that doesn't know the area very well from,
right.
say, you know, back in Kentucky or someplace
yep.
to come manage one, we could just, you know, streamline it and mm-hmm. save some time and get that
yeah.
person out of here.
And there were things that our airport manager was discussing last time at the Douglas Complex about cables, power lines. Even irrigation, I mean, everybody knows about the Agnes one, but just to make sure that the helicopters gets on a mass so everybody isn't discovering those things when you're out there. But
yeah.
you guys all need to remember there's a cable out here.
Yeah.
Well, I think what happened is that we discovered there was one out there that wasn't on a map.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that was during Douglas, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
That we discovered.
We
that.
May have known about it, but it didn't make it on
the phone. Well, everybody knew about it.
Everybody knew about it, right.
Well, except the people that needed to know about
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
So,
and we don't want that to happen.
Like that
yeah.
could come up.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of improvements have we done at Lake Selmax Park to facilitate cellular types
mm-hmm.
of services? I think Sarah's been working on that with our communications department. I know our communications has had some updates
mm-hmm.
that they're working on. I mean, maybe you already know this, and I'm being duplicative, but... Lengthening, yeah, I think we know those things, but I don't
well,
know.
No, actually.
I don't know.
Jenny and I were just blinking back and forth because we remember doing one of these types of meetings year before last?
I think so.
And it was very productive, and a lot of it was county staff was the initial group
yeah.
that was kind of targeted. And you're right, with the turnover, it would be very appropriate for some
meeting. Meeting
with
you guys
would
be.
Meeting with our department.
Oh, good.
Forester, I'm having but talk about it
from
large
part.
Yeah, the daily operations.
Yeah.
And just things to think about.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Kind of like the expectations, if there's a large fire on the landscape, what kind of phone calls can you expect from the forestry calling in, like, hey, can we use this park here to
right.
put a fire camp, or
yep.
they call you up and say, hey, you know the superintendent of this school, and
right.
sometimes if I already know who that is, or at least get that information to our logistics people that can make those phone calls and have
yeah.
that conversation, because, you know, schools make an excellent command post for fires just because they have the power, the facilities,
mm-hmm.
they got some showers, and
yep.
And a lot of space there with the ball field. So that seems to be an opportunity there. And it also helps the school districts out as well because they will procure a contract
oh,
with
yeah.
the districts and so be some money to offset some costs.
We just need to have to hire a new superintendent of schools.
They haven't done that yet?
No, I don't think. Well,
he's acting. He's an acting superintendent.
Yeah, they've got another one for a year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jenny was just saying, I was saying maybe we could have a meeting, you know, organized over here in our building room 156, and she said, well, we have it out at SAR because some of our new people may not really be familiar with SAR.
Yep.
You folks are.
That's where we
know where SAR is, but
yeah.
Our new people may not.
It makes sense.
Yes, because a lot of these people just started in the past year, and they may say, oh, yeah, it's out there somewhere in Merlin, but until they actually go there, and that way, when there's no emergency, they can find their way out there and know exactly where it is. So
yeah.
Maybe you could work together.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. It's really in alignment where my priorities are as far as, you know, I said the pre-planning, you know, this Southwest Oregon has done an excellent job with the pre-planning and those relationships and those contacts. And so a lot of times when you have a high turnover, like we had at ODF, you know, we're coming in new, and we got to, you know, put their name in the face and start that dialogue.
So. And one of the things that Vic and I talked about as an after action, just internally on the Douglas complex, when we went out and toured it, and he just didn't have, he didn't feel there was an opportunity, or if it was, he didn't take it, I'm not sure. But where to talk about, you know, when there's a plan for a back burn, at a morning meeting saying, you know, here's a location to do it. And just for Vic to be able to say, doesn't need to change anything, but to say, yeah, that's a reprod. You know, that 80 acres is worth blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
If there's a consideration of doing it on this road, that might, you know,
and that,
save us.
And that's huge, you know, from an agency administrator standpoint. I mean, every acre has a value. So, you know, some agencies may have the tendency that's their first option, but to me, that's our last resort, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but to have that, you know, conversation when you're in that planning process to be included as part of it and have that representation there, absolutely.
So the BLM outsources to ODF?
Yes, through contract.
But what about the Forest Service being able to talk to them about how do you work together? Because we have the most complex system of ownership in all Western counties, Josephine and Jackson County. So the fire doesn't respect property lines.
No.
We would sure like it to just stay on somebody else's property, but that doesn't happen. So how do we, that would be another opportunity, I think. And you guys obviously engage with them, but our people don't necessarily outside of the sheriff's office or our forestry department, but there might be a need to integrate them to the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where I fall as the agency administrator, because I'm representing all the landowners, which the county is, you know, a landowner here.
Yep.
And so I represent, and so that's one of the conversations I have with Gary Kensel and Rob McWhorter over there, is have those conversations. And so they know that every acre has a value, and, you know, with my history and my background, you know, they kind of look at me like, we're going to be able to work this kid over, you know.
Yeah.
But, I've done a lot of fires with property boundaries with the Forest Service, and you know, that defense was private ground and stood my ground you know, and having the operational background that I have with fire, you know, as an operations section chief, you know, having the background that I can actually talk the language that they understand. And
that's great.
And it, so
I know talking to private property owners as liaison to forestry, I know that property is a value. And then talking to, say, Jennifer and Link during the Biscuits, or even maybe it was the Silver Fire, but the agency was putting so much emphasis on saving their family cabin, and she's like, that's insured, I don't really care, there's some pictures, we'll get those out, but otherwise I don't have any insurance on the 80 acres of reprod we just spent $300,000 on reforesting. If I had a choice, That's the asset. So everybody understands that it isn't always the infrastructure that you think is valuable.
Yeah. And that's where our communication, I mean, ODF, we are the landowner's insurance.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
That's the burden that, you know, we're gonna take to the fight. And our priorities, you know, is life, resources, and then property, you know.
Right.
Where it's a little bit different in your guys' realm because, you know, they're doing the structure, and so it's like property and scene stabilization, I think, is for the structural side. But for us, it's that, you know, life is first, but then it's the timber resources, because there is no, especially if it's a young reprod stand, I mean, it's a total loss, and you're starting over. So, and we understand that as our mission. So I definitely will go to bat 10 times out of 10, you know, for the right thing for the land.
I think we lost one of those, didn't we?
We lost a couple that were pre-merged. So we had 2,600 acres that burned. We harvested 13.
Mm-hmm.
1,300 wasn't. Half of that 13 was in the later stage of just getting to that point of pre-merge. Some of it had no value. You're burning it up. We didn't replant it at all. We didn't harvest on it. But there was probably a good 300, about 400 acres that was just pre-merchantable. It was like, so you've waited 30, 40, 50 years?
Mm-hmm.
It burns up a decade out from being able to be of value.
Yeah.
That's what kills.
So, and when I talk with the Forest Service, and, you know, they understand our mission, and every acre has its value.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're always going to put life first, but we're going to do everything we can reasonable. And sometimes, you know, for instance, like the South Creek fire that we had last year, sometimes nature, Mother Nature forces your hand. And when you're making a 6,000 acre run in
right.
a day, it's pretty hard. But once you get down to that, well, where are we going to hold it at? You know, and it looks easy. Well, we'll just, you know, where are all the good roads at?
Sure.
You know? Yeah, we all maintain them. They're on the private. So, yeah, that's the first thing they want to go to. But those roads are accessing that, that timber stand. And, you know, we don't want to, that's not my
priority. Road won't be there next time if we can't afford to maintain it. I think what we're looking to do, one of the elements, a major element for me and the community, the CWPP, is that risk assessment and putting a priority so that you don't have to rely on a Vic or a Dave Streeter or me to be in the room. It's right there, color-coded, where we, as a property owner, have assessed. These are the points at which we would suggest. You, quick consultation, yeah, we can. We have to do it right here. Fine. You got to do what you got to do. And you're the experts. You make the decisions. But to just have that information and a quick reference kind of would be...
The other unique piece that comes in the conversation that we deal with is that, well, those fires are in land ownership that has timber value or resource value to it, but then it starts to come in into the areas where you've got urban interface, rural interface, either way you want to go. It gets into a weirder conversation because now people start to change their value set.
Mm-hmm.
And their value set between what the value of that tree is versus the value of that reconfigured tree that looks like a house. And what their intrinsic value is exponentially changes the matrix for us and our decision making in terms of where our resources go to fight the fire.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be an interesting dynamic, but it's one that agency administrators absolutely have to be engaged with when those decisions are being made and you've got that change in what's burning in terms of where we're assigning those resources and things. So you're spot on. But those relationships have to be established and that discussion needs to occur.
That's right. It's you could talk about this prioritization for days, if not hours. At the Forest Service's 20-year review look back, it was the Biscuit Fire that had the single largest detrimental impact to creating critical habitat for the northern spotted owl. It changed, that single fire changed its trajectory of making a positive increase in the number of spotted owl to a 3.5% decrease right at that year. It was towards the end of their look back. That's not good because it actually just puts more emphasis on the need to create habitat in other areas. It's the same thing as that million-acre fire over in the sage-grouse territory. Destroying all of that prime sage-grouse habitat, the agency has to go find it somewhere. And so it puts all that more emphasis on private sector, grazed land and stuff. And these are the things that I think about from a policy perspective is, how much emphasis do you put on, you know, these priorities of, well, it's just owl habitat. Well, it's not just owl habitat. It's affecting my need to create owl habitat, and that burns
up. It's got a dynamic effect.
It's
on
amazing.
The bird. Yeah.
So.
Did you evacuate the owls?
No, I'm kidding. Right? Nobody gave them the memo that they need to be here.
Sure, a great
but thing. Policies were written talking about how this, we Mr. Heck brought up, you know, the Ochoco, or some of these other grand set-asides that really, it feels nice for the conservation community to do these things. But what happens when they burn up is you have restrictions on how you can fight fire. And when you make these million-acre designations, and it's basically a hands-off approach that we're just not going to do it, regardless of the cost associated with it. And they're a major. They make these decisions. Like I said, we've talked about it.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Anyway,
you got wound up.
That's it. All I have to say. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
For me.
Thank you, Dave.
You guys.
So is there anything you need to add, Lang, in regards to the Defense Board or the Fire Chiefs Association? Anything
you
need to add in that?
Do you guys have anything that you want to ask questions of?
Okay. State Fire Marshal.
Two questions.
You have two questions.
One is on the, talking about the early attack, what about the post-attack, and as far as the maintenance and the maintaining the forest so they don't burn every time somebody spits in the wrong way or something? You know, where is that at? Because to me, and I'm just a novice, we've leaned so far toward the conservation, preservation, all that kind of stuff. We're just, I mean, you put anything in it, and it burns like crazy because everything is just waiting to be burned up.
Yep.
So how's that worked on? What's the involvement that you might have, or what we could facilitate or help out anyway?
Quite a bit out there.
Answer that one, Dave.
there's quite a bit going on. You know, we've done an excellent job putting fire out in the last 130 years. So, I mean, we've done a good job, but the fuel loading is still really, that's the problem that we have. I mean, yeah, it's getting warmer out there, and you know, we're seeing some tougher conditions. But I think really what's compounding is the fuel loading. So, you know, we're spending a lot of money to go fight the fires. I mean, you know, $50-60 million a year on average to go fight fires, when maybe we need to, you know, restructure our approach. And so we are doing a little bit of that using the Good Neighbor Authority with the Forest Service and the BLM and the Cohesive Wildfire Strategy. And our goal here in the Southwest Oregon District is to get a couple of projects that fit into the Cohesive Wildfire Strategy. And the idea is to get all the players involved, from both the industry, private landowners, to the Forest Service, to the environmental groups, get everybody all around the table and try to figure out, you know, what can we do to change the landscape out there a little bit. And, you know, the goal of it is to get, you know, green logs on the trucks and get them to the mill and start, you know, dealing with these fuels problems out there. And so with the Ashland AMA, is that?
Ashland Forest Resilience.
Yeah. So there's a pilot project going out there that actually show that we can actually find that middle ground and start taking care of that. So with the Cohesive Wildfire Strategy, the legislature authorized $5 million of state money to utilize to try to get some movement of something going on the federal property. So, and that's really, with the checkerboard ownership that we're in, that's really where the problem, you know, seems to be lying. So hopefully within the next couple of years, we actually see it getting some traction. Right now, the Northeast Oregon area, the Blue Mountains, they've done several projects to work to try to combat the, you know, put in the fuel breaks out there on some strategic roads, and look for those areas where, you know, the BLM or Forest Service, excuse me, could maintain some of that rush and reduce that fuel loading, so it's not such a transfer of risk to the landowner. So that's kind of what we're doing as far as the long. The short-term answer is try to work with the CWPP and work with the FireWise communities and try to get folks educated, because a lot of folks, you know, they're not native to Oregon. They move up from all in. Everyone wants to be out in the woods and it's all pretty, and then they don't understand that there's, you know, you're moving into an environment that can burn at any time, you know, and so trying to get those folks on board. And we've got quite a few grants and a lot of work going on just in that FireWise program and working in the with the defensible space around the home.
I think the piece of that reality, that especially when you look at the risk assessment that was completed that you referred to, there is a huge amount of ground that needs to be treated, that needs to be maintained once it's treated. And it's a huge, daunting task when you have limited dollars. And why I applaud the ideas and the concepts of going in and trying to find innovative ways and some funding mechanisms and the prices that go on. The reality is, the amount of money we've invested in fighting fires over the years, you need to see something along the same order or more just in getting in and getting the fuel treatments done if you're truly going to significantly impact it. So.
Yeah, if you look at the map and do what's been, it's drops. It needs to be buckets. The assessment, I would say,
buckets.
Yeah, and it's six different elements of treatment. It's full-on timber sales. It's stewardship contracting, and it's fuels reduction contracting. It's controlled burns, not piles, but actual perfect time of year. Light it on fire, let it do its controlled under. But there's a PR element. I heard it significantly this year from a dozen people about these controlled burns, that they don't like to see them. And it needs to be for every day, every smoke that's done during a controlled season. It's the smoke that's not produced in no control, out of control. And there's a whole need for PR, maybe using Title III funds somehow, to educate the public. People who come up here and recreate, and it's like, there's already smoke in the air. Well, it's controlled right now. But if you don't do that, this valley back in the day used to be just inundated with smoke during this time of year, but there wasn't that much during the summertime.
Yep.
So. Oh, the wigwam. We got rid of that.
No, that is a great point. You know, I'm serving right now on a wildfire policy committee out of Salem, which Chad Davis is also on.
Okay.
And that's one of the topics we're talking about is the prescribed fire and getting out there and doing it. The public's perception is smoke's bad and it's hazardous for your health and it causes all these issues. And so you got the negative side, and the media really, you know, seems to key in on that and makes a good story. So we're trying to find those days, and, you know, we got the DEQ laws and the smoke management plan that we got to try to adhere to, but we need to find a way to communicate and to get that done, because what happens is we have the wildfires going all summer long and that smoke's just sitting in here, and then we get a couple of nice days like this outside and so, hey, it's a burn day. We go put fire on the ground and the public's calling because they've been sitting in that smoke all summer long, so they're not real patient to any more of it. So if we could, you know, keep the smoke out in the summer and put a little bit in the fall and spring, I think, because it's nothing when I was a kid growing up here in slash burn season. I mean, it was
thick.
There was a lot. We used to go out and burn 500-600 acres a day on the burn crew and burn them as fast as you can. And that's a good thing, too, especially getting rid of the slash. But because of, on the industrial side, because of logging practices have changed to the whole tree yardage, you know, they're just burning the units and leaving just some residual slash, versus back in the 80s and early 90s before the old growth logging really stopped, is that they were bucking it down in the units, so you had, that's the only way you could get rid of that fuel loading. So with the culture and the perception, you know, in 20 years, it's really changed, and so
it
people
really
just aren't used to seeing that there. But it's very, you know, it's a benefit, putting that prescribed fire the right place at the right time.
The lesson, though, out of the whole thing is we're not being proactive in finding ways to best correct the problem. Mother Nature is finding a way to correct the problem.
That's a sad reality. That's what will happen. I mean, it's just like you have...
It'll self-correct.
Pictures of 100 years ago, you got this hillside, and you can see the trees, you see the ground, and today you look at it, you can't see anything but trees. And it's just, everything's so overgrown, just waiting for some fire to come along and do its job.
Many of us were just over on the east side in Redmond for the Chiefs Conference, and as you drive, I came up back to Port of Sandingham and some of those places. Quite a bit of work's gone on over on that side with a lot of fuels treatment, and it is just, it's gorgeous to see what the forest is really supposed to look like, what you can see through the trees to the depth. And as you come back to the west side and you start to drive through our areas, you're stopped right there at the road.
30 feet, yeah, right.
And, you know there's trees in there because you can see the tops of them, but the fuel loading in it and stuff. And it goes like that.
One of the challenges, I think, like down in our area, is the BLM's come in and has done some work.
Yeah.
And I actually met with the BLM rep here looking at Chicago, where I live, Firewise community. And they had some money to come back in and do it, but that had been done 10 years earlier.
Right.
And they said they couldn't come back, even though, I mean, in 10 years, we thought 100 years, but in 10 years, you can't tell that any work has been done, but they're prohibited from going in there. And that's a significant fire break for us. To keep, you know, that Ken Rose Idlewild area protected. So, you know, we're being hamstrung by, you know, some federal bureaucracy, and, you know, we're putting a significant amount of homes at risk.
Well, the whole point of that is to creating a firewise community is not actually to do the work. It's to make them educated about what is needed as property owners in a rural area with fuels. We're going to move that money to someplace else that hasn't been treated so they get educated. But it's really the property owners, once we do that huge initial cost to maintain it every year, going out with loppers as opposed to chainsaws and everything.
Well, this was on BLM land.
They had
money to continue to do some more work. But this particular fire break we were here 10 years ago or 8 years ago, we can't do anything for 10 years.
That's where those burns need to be prescribed.
Well, that was one of the things exactly was talked about, was the maintenance, especially when you have some of the, you know, originally some of the first projects was just targeting where there was a threat to, you know, high-risk area, where there was a threat to private land, so they would put in a fuels break and walk away and say, okay, we did something good. Well, 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road, it comes back. And so it's that communicating that once you touch it, plan on, some sort of rotation and come back and maintain it. I tell everybody I mow my lawn, quite a few times a year.
Right.
We just don't push the mower once and then walk away. You got to come back and try to maintain that. So.
And one of our biggest challenges is very evident on that map. You look at that checkerboard and how we're intertwined with Forest Service, BLM, state, and then with private land. We got some big issues, particularly in the rural area of our county.
For us, we're so aware that last year we wrote, after the Douglas Complex, a $1.1 million check in reforestation. And those are some of the most complex system of ownership in the state. For what? It's just going to burn again because our neighbors didn't go in and reduce fuel loads. It's ridiculous. But we're mandated to do it. And it's like there should be an insurance policy or a taking litigation for people who don't provide those. So we're working with the BLM.
That's all we need. That's all.
Yeah, we're looking to the BLM to do those fuel breaks, at least to provide some defensible space between our
products. Yeah, otherwise it's just a transfer of risk. And
Okay.
Oh, I got one more.
Well, you have one more, okay.
It's for you, Ms. Chesky. I see sitting here, Dennis, I don't see County Fire. And it brings up the other thing. Where are we at in this fire standards?
Well, I can speak to it a little bit, but I'll probably refer to Dennis because he's been attending the meetings. There's been two meetings, and I know they've made some pretty good progress on putting the standards together. I know they're working on getting a third meeting together to work through some of the final pieces. If I can let Dennis talk to that. And then as far as their being here, they were invited and they were at the team's meeting this morning.
Okay.
So maybe they had other things too. I don't know. I didn't talk to Chief Trader before.
Oh, there's smoke, there's fire. There could be
it could be. I don't know. But.
We've got the standard basically written. We are hung up on one key issue. Chief Peterson from District 3 is of the opinion we should push that issue to the commissioners to make a decision. I differ with that position, but that's kind of where we're hung up on that. So we're continuing to meet, and that's issue training and issue background checks for their firefighters. That's where we're at. As far as them being a role in this, at the moment they're not assigned a mutual aid agreement. They don't have a role. They have they're really no different than an insurance funded wildland fire protection agency that shows up to protect their insured home. They have a role in protecting the structures that they have subscriptions to, but they don't have a role beyond that at this point. They have made applications to the Rogue Valley Chiefs to sign a mutual aid agreement. And it was brought up today, and so the executive board of the Rogue Valley Chiefs will look at their application and it'll make a decision. It'll go off to the membership to decide if they can become part of the mutual aid agreement or not.
Okay.
Okay.
We're
gonna
I'm
see, you're done. We're going to see Fire Marshal. Do you have any further comments?
No, we met with them 3 months ago, 2 months ago. We had our State Fire Defense Board Chief meeting, and most of that was centered on getting a seasonal update on what predictions that Dave had talked about, what's expected of the year. They are staffed up. They had a very busy year last year. Of the 19 potential task forces that are available across the state, they deployed all of them at one time during the height of the fire season, and also had out all three of their IMTs, the incident management teams that are used to manage those resources. And, fortunately, most of them were Douglas County in the north and east of us. So we were pleased, although several of us were extremely nervous because we knew that with that mobilization that most of those resources went to the north. It was the first time since 1992 that our region mobilized a task force and sent it out to the north a couple of times. So. We had some involvement with them on the Douglas County Fire. I can't name it right now. So it's just outside of Days Creek. Went up there and worked to establish a delegation authority between Jackson County and the fire team so that they could work on any of the fire that happened to move over into the Jackson County side. They are staffed up. They are ready to go. And we were integrated with them. And we even made some changes here regionally to really put together another preparatory task force in the event that they need to make the request. Now, that's done with the thought that our region and Deschutes County, for all intents and purposes, or Central Oregon, are kind of the last places they're going to go to ask for those resources, so it's going to have to be another extreme year. mainly because they know that we're heavily engaged in our own initial attack, and the last thing they need is to fight that much fire around the other state, is not to have one emerge here and go. Mm-hmm. So we're still our dominant receiver region, and we'll most likely stay that way, but we certainly want to do our part when other folks are in need. Mm-hmm. Marshall can do that.
Did you just pick up fires at a different time of year?
Yeah.
Well, last year was unique in that because of the drought, it really changed the landscape in terms of the elevation that Dave alluded to earlier. Mm-hmm. And that put fires in other parts of the state on ground that normally isn't receptive to fire. And that drained the resources, and it really became scary. What saved us, I think, for the most part, is one, people had a sense we didn't have the number of man-caused fires, but the other ones we did get away. We just didn't have that normal cycle that we have that generates our fires. Like, that was okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Jenny?
I don't have anything to add unless you guys have questions for me.
Okay.
We've been talking about fire season already this year. So.
Yeah, we've had a meeting.
We've had a fair amount of thunderstorms already this year. Is it
we have a little more like normal.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's going to be cycled with the moisture. So anytime we get the warm air and then get the moisture, it pushes in for that spring set, we run the potential. So.
We're right in the middle of that seasonal transition, and it's pretty common in Southwest Oregon in that May time frame to get a cutoff lows, and that's typically what happens. It's on the jet stream, they set up and just kind of wobble through, and so probably more average, I can think of quite a few Memorial Day weekends and thunderstorms and mm-hmm. rained out on picnics and stuff.
Yep. As long as the rain comes looking back, it's wonderful.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. We actually had our first lightning fire this last weekend.
Okay. Seems like there's more this year than I
do. Mm-hmm. One's for us to be really sensitive to, and new ones that potentially occur in that August weather.
Yes.
Where a few of them is more receptive, and there's a lot, usually more dry lightnings associated with this country. That's when we get nervous.
Mm-hmm. I look at the Four Corners region real close as we get into July and August. That's where the monsoonal machine's at. And,
yeah.
And typically 3 days of hot 100-degree plus temperatures here. And if that high is sitting right there, you can almost bet they'll start seeing that moisture moving in and get some lightning. Mm-hmm. So and that's when we pull the pin to start pre-pulling resources around. So
it's not a spoken rule or anything. But the way I kind of look at it, if the storm comes from this direction, it's usually going to be a lot wetter than the storm that comes from that direction.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If the storm that comes from that direction, that's the one that you really start absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Anything that anyone has not talked about that needs to be presented today? We didn't stick to an agenda.
It really so. Just
that was the best meeting, guys.
That's me. Well, sometimes you cover all the material and you don't have to cover, go with the agenda.
I think the only other
I just want to make sure everybody has a chance to say what they need to. I don't want anybody to miss out.
Other piece is we haven't done NFMAC here in the last few years, and just thinking of that because that's an all-together mm-hmm. group dynamic from an emergency management standpoint, from an ODS standpoint.
We did one for the Crouse Lane fire.
Oh, did we?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because then we have the grant that we got, the mitigation grant.
Mm-hmm.
So it was actually, it was Dan Thorpe and unfortunately our GIS guy, and we didn't give him good instructions. And he's got a fire background, so Dan was asking for stuff and we were asking for stuff on the structural side. And so he was trying to create this amazing map that had all our stuff on it. It was for two different purposes. So. We got an amazing map. But.
I just wasn't engaged in that one because we didn't submit to it. So. But that potential is always there, and that has a tendency to also drive some of our decision making so mm-hmm. that we can get paid some revenues back in to help cover some of those costs.
Okay.
And we all kind of play a role in that. So if there's times mm-hmm. when we engage you guys, it may not necessarily be because there's an immediate fire threat as much as there's the FMAC conversation.
Right. Mm-hmm. A lot of times it'll be about the money and recouping any cost that we possibly can. So we're really proactive in trying to get as many dollars as we can.
And I think from a combined effort, the next one that just to keep in the back of your head is like the Douglas complex is if we go with something that big, that complex, and that terrain on resources, maybe being a little quicker on those decisions to search and seek out National Guard resources, other state resources. Mm-hmm. That takes some activity on your guys' part to be able to get those resources mm-hmm. covered. So, and having those conversations as early as possible as well.
This may be kind of an off-wall kind of thing, but I know those of us that have rural lands pay to the state for fire. Mm-hmm. I think we paid $190 last year, $210 or something. But anyway, pay that to the state. If there were some landowners that they would have some incentive to have some of that refunded or reduced or whatever to clear the property, and of course it would be subject to inspection, of course, mm-hmm. but do you think that would be something that would help you as far as landowners doing something about clearing their property?
Yeah, the way that fire protection is funded in the state of Oregon is pretty unique, and that the $180 that you had paid for the Forest Patrol assessment was also matched with general fund dollars to be, it really mm-hmm. cost $360
right.
to
right.
provide that. So the legislative change would be for every dollar we would reduce your rate would also reduce the general fund rate. So it would be a double hit to the forest protection budget. So not saying that that's not something, you know, to address, but too, with the large fire funding, in order to get into the emergency fire cost fund, the EFC fund, that we have to expel our daily deductibles for large fire costs, which for the district is $25,000. And then we get eligibility on the EFC fund up to a cap. Once everything caps out about $50 million, that pays our insurance deductible. And then the Lloyd's of London kicks in with an additional $25 million for the cost of suppression. Mm-hmm. And after $75 million, then it all becomes back to the general fund. So how that would affect the structure of the fund mm-hmm. would be, you know, it would make sense to try to incentivize, mm-hmm. you know, on those kinds.
That's what I was thinking of, is how to incentivize people mm-hmm. to do the work, because there's no way government's ever going to have enough people or enough money to do it for them. But if you have some kind of incentive to get them to do it themselves.
The other thing that makes it complex, too, is that you have the private landowner side of it, mm-hmm. And then you have the government ownership, which is the county, the BLM, those sorts of folks, and that they pay the full cost of fire protection because they don't have access into the general fund. So if we reduce the landowner's contribution, then we'd have to provide relief over to the federal side, who's probably not doing a whole lot on the ground. And so, but the same risk is still there, the same amount of money. So it would be probably pretty challenging to try to figure out how that system would work and what kind of, you know, required legislation for sure out of
Sterling
and how to draw that in. But, I mean, it's definitely something worth bringing up, you know, trying to incentivize.
Well, there's something even without, you know, Senate Bill 360 said this is what you need to do to provide any kind of a reduction in cost.
But, yeah.
You know, to keep your costs at this level, because they're going up exponentially every year because of the cost of firefighting. If you don't do this, it's not going to be 180.
That's the stick.
Year.
That's not the carrot.
Right.
Yeah. That was
going to be blah, blah, blah.
Senate Bill 360 was interesting because it was the way it was, the law was wrote, really didn't have a whole lot of teeth.
No.
And so then if you did get a fire, it was the burden of the state to prove that you had to use excessive cost or, you know, above the ordinary, so extra cost. So because you didn't take care of your property, I had to drop two loads of retardant on there. So, you know, that cost I spent $300,000 to try to stop the fire right there because you didn't have your defensible space. Well, even though you spent $300,000, you can only collect up to $100,000 of extra costs. So you still are losing. So there's not a whole lot of teeth in 360. So I think that's one of the things that the policy group I'm on is looking taking another look at that and trying to figure it out. I mean, the intent of the law, yeah, it makes sense to, yeah, clean up around your place and certify and be good.
Right.
So wasn't a whole lot of bite. And maybe originally when that law came out in 97, it was more to try to capture the insurance industry to maybe look at that, and maybe they would charge the landowner more. But, you know, like State Farm, they're a regional law space. So, you know, they didn't want to do the extra work on that. So
okay.
That was a good effort.
Okay. We have on here an agenda item that says FEMA declaration of emergency. Do we need to cover any of that?
I don't think so. The one thing I do want to mention in regards to National Guard resources, the governor's office has kind of been leaning forward and enacting essentially what's called Op Plan Smokey. And what that does is it allows for the utilization of those National Guard resources on state fires. And so in talking with Oregon Emergency Management, our role is really to make sure that we're clearly communicating with the incident management team to say, what can we do locally? And then putting the rest of it on the fire team for roadblocks, for, you know, whatever security or different things are actually required. So the conversations, I think, are just going to look a little bit different. And Corey had said that he would have conversation with you guys, if he hasn't already, as far as what search and rescue resources would be available during initial attack and extended attack, and then kind of where, what their threshold is.
Mm-hmm. That, maybe that should be part of that meeting. Corey.
Has he met with you guys
yet? Yes, I've sat down with
my colleagues. Okay.
We've put a bunch of his folks through training this year. So.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
I think a really important thing in search and rescue is certainly one of those, is just because we were at whatever last year, do not assume that that's where we're at next year. Title III funding for search and rescue is all but over. We spent that 2008 money. And there are other programs that could definitely be, you know, that are on the list. And, oh, we talked to the forester last year. No, it could be different this year. We have three potentially less staff coming in June than we had. Well, they're going to you guys.
Okay.
But then they're not coming back to us necessarily, and the other guy isn't. So those are things that we're always in flux. And with our fiscal challenges ahead, it's always a moving target. So.
Moving
target.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anybody want to add anything or have any questions of us? Thank you. Appreciate that.
Thank you. Thanks for taking time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Thanks for the name.
Yeah. Well,
okay.
I'll probably get that over sometime because I have to bring business cards. I'll get to the air time
next morning.
So.
Next time. Nice to meet you.
Yeah.
Hey, it is 2:32 and we are adjourned.